What a beautiful name is the name of Jesus. Man, no truer words were ever written. If you have your Bibles, you'll turn to Matthew chapter 2. We're looking on Sunday nights. We've been looking at some of the characters around the story of the birth of Jesus. Some of the what you would consider, I guess, the supporting cast of this story and this birth event. And tonight, I want us to look at the wise men. Just a little trivia. How many wise men were there? Thank you. We don't know. We often say three wise men, but the Bible doesn't say anything about a number. It talks about the gifts. But we really don't know. And there's a lot of mystery around these wise men, the magi, as they are called. And for a long time, because in the original translation, it's translated magi, most people tried to translate that as magician. These who were diviners or sorcerers, but that was not the meaning of the name at all. These were philosophers. These were people who studied the stars, people who looked at nature to seek after wisdom, and they were very learned men. And these are some of the first people outside the Jews that God spoke to in identifying or declaring the birth of Jesus. The shepherds were Jews. The angels came and they declared the birth of Jesus, told the shepherds where to go and to see Jesus. They went, they worshiped this Messiah that had been declared by the angels. And up until then, we really don't hear of anyone else that's been notified by God that this special child has been born, that something significant has happened. But the Magi, the wise men, are the first outside of the Jewish kingdom, outside of the Jewish faith, the Jewish people, that God clued in, that God let know, that God invited to come and see His child. And I want us to look at, and we're going to look at some different things and kind of talk a little bit about where they may have come from and how they may have understood some of the things that they understand. And hopefully it'll kind of connect some of the dots from Old Testament stuff and give us a clearer view of who these men were and where they came from and how they were looking for this Jewish king. So if you would stand with me in beginning in chapter 2 of Matthew, verse 1. It says, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, magi, or wise men, from the east arrived in Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is he who is born king of the Jews? For we saw his star in the east and have come to worship him.' And when Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem was with him. Gathering together all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They said to him, 'In Bethlehem of Judea, for this is what has been written by the prophet: And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means the least among the leaders of Judah, for out of you shall come from forth a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod secretly called the Magi and determined from them the exact time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search carefully for the child. And when you found him, report to me, so that I may too come and worship him.' After hearing the king, they went their way, and the star which they had seen in the east went on before them until it came and stood over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. After coming into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell on the ground and worshipped him. Then opening their treasures, they presented to him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned by God in a dream, they did not return to Herod. The Magi left for their own country by another way." You may be seated. So again, remember, Matthew is writing this gospel, this account of the life of Jesus. And he's writing this to Jews. All right? So
often, many times throughout this gospel that he writes, he uses the term so that the prophecies will be fulfilled. And he's letting them know and trying to connect the dots for these Jews of the Old Testament prophets, things that they had been taught all their life, things that they knew, and things that were signifying the coming of the Messiah and what his life would be like, what his entrance into this world would be like, what his purpose would be. And so Matthew's trying to connect the dots about that Jesus really is the Messiah. So he's writing down, this is years later, after Jesus was already crucified and ascended, going into heaven. He's writing this down, and he's trying to help them see where Jesus fulfilled the prophets. And so it's not by accident, it's by design that he says that it's in Bethlehem that Jesus was. It says, now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem, he specifies this town, this little village outside of Jerusalem, this little place that seems very insignificant, but he names it so that later on when he talks about what the prophets say in verses 5 and 6, it will be of significance. So he's identifying that this Jesus was born in Bethlehem. That's part of the prophecy for the Messiah. So anyway, after he was born in Judea in the days of Herod the king. Now, if you know anything about history in the Bible and stuff, there are several different Herods. This Herod is Herod the Great. He's the second Herod. His father was Herod Antipas. And this Herod was given by the Roman government. He was established as the tetrarch, the king of the Jewish area. He was not liked by the Jews. His dad had some Jewish claim, but it was kind of a roundabout way. His dad was an Idumean, which simply means he was an Edomite. He was of the descendants of Esau, not Jacob. All right? The 12 tribes came from Jacob. Esau was his twin brother, all right, or was his brother. So he was an Idumean. He was an Edomite. So he was connected to the Jewish people, but not by the lineage of Jacob. So he did have some Jewish claim, but he was married to an Arab woman. And so Herod the Great, this Herod that's in this part of the story, had a roundabout Jewish dad, but an Arabian mom. So he had really no claim in the Jewish faith and the Jewish people. So the Jews did not like him. His dad was considered less than Jewish. His dad was considered not a pure Jew, and he was definitely not considered a pure Jew since his heritage was mixed with Arabian or Arabic. So he didn't have any real connection with the people, but he was a slick dude. If you read any of the history, and I was kind of reading up on some of it as I was preparing for this, and man, Herod must have been a talker. He must have been a slick cat because he'd get in trouble and he'd talk his way out of it. I mean, he'd line up with people. There's all kind of civil wars happening that was going on in Rome, and this was the time of Mark Antony and Cleopatra, and they were setting up shop over here and trying to pull power away from Caesar. And man, there was a big battle and fight going on between there. And he had lined up, Herod the Great had lined up with Mark Antony and Cleopatra, and he was still trying to play both sides. And they got defeated, and so he had to go to Caesar, and he had to talk his way out of this mess. He'd gotten to seven. He was a slick dude. He was a politician's politician. Well, he tried to do the same thing with the Jewish people. He tried to earn their favor. He wanted to lead. He was given this leadership. He was declared the tetrarch. He was declared the king of the Jews by the Roman government. And so he was in authority, but it was a very tenuous authority. He was the ruler, but man, he was on shaky ground most of the time. So what he did is he tried to appease the people. Man, he started building all kinds of stuff. He added on to the temple. Now, if you remember any temple history, the second temple was built after the first temple was destroyed by the Babylonians. All right? They came back out of Babylon, out of captivity. They laid the foundation for the first temple, and they started building the first temple. And the people that had seen the second temple, and the people that had seen the first temple wept because the second temple paled in comparison. Wasn't nothing like Solomon's temple. Well, that temple was still standing. And so what Herod did is he said, I'm going to try and appease these Pharisees and the Sadducees, the rulers of the Jews, the one that have the real authority. I'm going to try and win them over. So, man, he pumped a lot of money into the temple, and he added on to the temple, made it gorgeous. He put a lot of funds, a lot of work, a lot of emphasis on the temple, and, man, it was a beautiful place. This is the place where the disciples, when they were coming out with Jesus, they were looking around and said, Jesus, look at this temple. Isn't it beautiful? And Jesus said, yeah, it's okay. I'm going to tear it down in 3 days later, I'm going to rebuild it. What? They didn't understand what he's talking about. But man, it was a gorgeous place. So he was really trying to encourage the people. There was an earthquake that destroyed thousands of homes, left a lot of people homeless. He went in and he rebuilt the city for them. Man, you're talking about government help. He came in, rebuilt their houses, rebuilt the cities, did everything. He was trying to appease the Roman government. He went and he built a port city called Caesarea. And that was a knockout city. It wasn't like the city of Jerusalem, wasn't laid out like it. It was laid out like a Roman city. And he named it after Caesar, Caesarea. Right? So he is always trying to appease people. He's always trying to shore up his power. He was always trying to take care of, but he was a bloody dude too. The people he couldn't buy, he killed. One was his own father-in-law. He was a murderous dude. And so you have to see and know the heart of Herod to really understand the story and what happened later on that he really could kill every baby in and around Bethlehem from 2 years and under. Seems like a really cold-blooded thing, but man, he was all about his power, his position, and protecting it at all costs. All right? So this is Herod the Great. Now, he says that in the time of Herod the Great, he says in verse 2 where is he who has been born the king of the Jews? The Magi came from the east. I kind of skipped that, which I don't need to, because they're the other players that we need to get an understanding of. These wise men, says it came from the east. Now, different scholars, different theologians give basically two possibilities of where they may have come from. One is they may have come from the Chaldeans, from Babylon. All right? Wise men of the East. We all know that the Babylonians were very wise people. Man, they had developed astronomy, they had developed math, language, they had done all kinds of stuff. They were a very advanced society. Even though they had been overthrown, there was still a lot of knowledge left, and a lot of philosophers, a lot of wise men in that area. The other place that they say they could have come from, because it's actually east of Jerusalem, is Arabia. And in that area, again, very, very known for wise men, very known for philosophers, very much known for people that study the stars. So could have been either place. Some say that because of the three gifts that they brought, the gold, frankincense, and myrrh, probably came from Arabia, because that's where that area was known for those three things. Okay? So it could be from Babylon, it could be from Arabia, but these men had been looking at the heavens, studying the stars, and they saw this new star. Now the question is, how would they know that the star represented the king of the Jews? That a new king had been born for the Jews? Could have been a king for anybody. How would they have been thinking about the Jews? Well, do you remember the story of Esther? When the people were taken, the Jews were taken into captivity in Babylon, they were dispersed all throughout the known world. They weren't just kept in Babylon. And because in the story of Esther, remember what was his name? Nathan? Not Nahum. Naaman. I knew it started with an M. Naaman said, hey, I want to kill all the Jews. He hated Haman. Thank you. Haman hated the Jews, and he wanted the king to give him permission to send out a letter to wipe out all the Jews in all the known world. And so that letter was sent out, and read the story of Esther, it'll help. So Jews were all over the world. They weren't just in the city of Babylon. They were pockets of Jews all over the place, and they had taken their religion all over the place. And there were people in the story of Esther that sided with the Jews, that liked the Jews, that probably worshiped the God of the Jews. So their story, their history, their prophecies, their scriptures were scattered all over the world. So being philosophers, being wise men, men who want to know information, I'm sure they studied this Jewish text, this Jewish religion, and they possibly could have come in contact with this and understand that there are prophecies that there is coming a new king of the Jews. And so it's not just that it's happenstance that they would think about the king of the Jews and identify this new star with the coming king of the Jews. They possibly knew these prophecies from the Old Testament, and they were too looking in the skies to see when this king was going to come. They were expecting him to come. Very possible. Don't know this for a fact, okay? But you see how God has been working all throughout history. There's nothing really of happenstance and chance that takes place. God has been preparing. He's got his people scattered all over the world. The message of a coming king is all over the world. And now, at the right time, God reveals that his king has come. Now, interestingly, there's been two groups of people who God has told that his Messiah has showed up on the scene. Who was the first group that God told? The shepherds. Daryl and I were talking earlier, the lowest of the low. The most outcast of all the Jewish people, God sent his angels to declare to them, hey, the Messiah has come. After them, we don't hear of God telling anybody about the Messiah. So far, it's just Joseph, Mary, Elizabeth, and Zacharias that know it, and the shepherds. Now, Gentiles. Isn't that cool? God let the lowest of the low, the outcast of Jewish society know, and now he's let the Gentiles know, these non-Jews, and he's invited them to come and see his new king. That's awesome. All right? So he says, so these guys see this star. It could be a star that they normally look for. Some people try to say, well, it's a supernova that they're looking, and this supernova occurred, and it was just a normal event that they saw. Well, the Bible says it's more supernatural than that. Okay? So there was some type of heavenly event. There was some type of stellar thing that God said, there's something amazing happening, and he let them know that it was the king represented, the king that's been born. And so it says they came, and verse 2 says, they asked the king, has the king of the Jews been born? Now again, remember, right now, who has the title king of the Jews? Herod the Great. Well, I'm sitting right here. No, the new king of the Jews. Well, you can see how this would definitely threaten his power, threaten his position, threaten his claim to the throne, and we've got to deal with it, he says. So he says, we've seen this star in the east and have come to worship him. I think that's very important. These men, that's why I think they were looking for this Jewish Messiah. This is what leads me to believe and to agree with some of the theologians I've read, that they understood the prophecies of God. They had heard these Jewish prophecies. They were looking for this Messiah that the prophets had told was coming. So they saw the star, they came, and they didn't come just to see. Didn't say they come to pay homage. They came to worship, which is interesting to me. Again, Gentiles, pagans, if you will, that have come to worship. So Herod does the only thing he knows. I don't know where he's at. Let's see. When Herod heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem was troubled with him. It began to be the talk of the town. There's a new king. There's a new king. Hey, Herod, we hate him anyway. There's a new one being born. We're gonna get behind this king. So he sees this trouble coming. So he gathers together all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, inquiring of them where the Messiah was to be born. He understood that this new king, the king of the Jews, is the Messiah that they've been looking for. And they said to him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for this is what is written by the prophet. And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means the least among the leaders of Judah. For out of you shall come forth a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. So you can see why Herod would be being concerned. You can understand why he was troubled. Then Herod secretly called the Magi. He didn't want everybody to know his plan. So he called them in and said, look, he determined from them exactly the time the star appeared. Okay, guys, tell me when you saw this star. How long has it been? Most theologians believe it took them somewhere from possibly 6 months to 2 years to travel the distance that they came. This wasn't just a couple of weeks after Jesus was born. All right? That's why, again, later on, if you continue reading after where we stopped, it says that he ordered that every child from 2 years old and less be killed. So they said probably it had to be their response was somewhere between a year and a half and 2 years, or he wouldn't have killed that age of children. If it had been 6 months, he would have killed every kid from a year old and under. All right? So it had been a while since his birth. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search fully for the child. And when you found him, report to me so that I too may come and worship him. After hearing the king, they went their way. And the star, which they had seen in the east, went before them until it came and stood over the place where the child lay. Again, that shows that it had to be some type of a miraculous thing. It wasn't just a normal star. It wasn't some supernova that was out there somewhere. It was something that God was using to lead them to the exact place, to the town, to the place where Jesus, this Messiah, would be found, that would lead them to the place where they could meet this king. And notice their response. So much different from the response of the Pharisees, so much different from the response of the Sadducees, so much different from the response of the priests and the high priest and all the religious leaders who had supposedly been looking for Jesus, for looking for this Messiah for a long time. They were jealous of him, but look at the response of these magi, these wise men. It says, when they came, they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. They were fired up. They were rejoicing with exceedingly great joy. It's like all these New Orleans Saints fans when they won the Super Bowl. They were rejoicing with exceedingly great joy. This wasn't just your normal, yay, glad we got here. Whoo, man, our trip's over. They were fired up dancing. They were exceedingly great in joy. All right? So their heart was overflowing. They were anticipating. They understood the significance of this birth. They knew that when they were coming, they weren't just seeing any two-year-old. They weren't just seeing any other baby. This was the promised Messiah. This was the King of the Jews. That's why I think that they had been looking for this for a long time. They had been anticipating that these prophecies would come true. This wasn't just some random experience. It wasn't just, oh, well, we saw a star and knew it was a king of somebody, so we knew it was important, so we want to come bring him some gifts. No, they came and worshiped. They were fired up because they finally got to meet this one particular important promised child. All right? So when you read through it, oftentimes we just read the story and we don't think about what it says. these guys were anticipating. These guys had come from a long, long distance to worship this new king of the Jews. Why was it significant to them? What would they care? From a thousand miles or so away, what would they care if the Jews got a new king? It didn't matter to them if Herod was the king or if Billy Bob was the king. It wasn't going to affect them one bit. They're 1,200 miles away. Why would they be excited about a new king for the Jews? Other than they knew that he had been prophesied and he was a child of God. Had to be something more than just they saw a star and a star represented a king being born. It wouldn't have mattered that much to them. So verse 11 says, after coming into the house, they saw the child with Mary the mother, and they fell on the ground. They fell down, face prostrate before him. That's what it literally means. It didn't mean they fell to the knees. They fell face down, flat on the ground, prostrated themselves, and they worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and they presented to him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now, again, what's the significance of these? There's been all kinds of things that have been told that these possibly could represent. But historically, in this time of trade, one of the commentators that I read said, hey, this is a very common, common commodity. When you're going from nation to nation, it's kind of like it's how you buy your way through as a merchant. Gives you safe travel. You got to have something to give them a value to let you pass through. All right, what's the significance? Why does it matter? Well, if you continue reading on just a little while, what does God tell Joseph to do? Take the baby to Egypt because Herod's trying to kill him. So what does he need to go to Egypt? He got to have some money, but he's also got to have some way of paying passage into this foreign country. So again, I think God's setting things up. He's putting things in place, providing what they need to go where they need to go so the next prophecy can be fulfilled. Out of Egypt, I've called my son. All right. So God, none of this stuff is by chance. None of it's circumstance. All of it is God's design, God's plan, God's provision for the next step that's got to be taken. The gold and the frankincense and the myrrh are very important. Could be for that. It could represent something else, but I think that's a very, very feasible possibility. Then verse 12, and having been warned by God, again, God speaks to him. Having been warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod, the Magi left for their own country by another way. These guys show a lot of faith for Gentiles. More faith than most of the Jews. They saw the star. They had been looking for this promised king that was to come. They had heard about it through the Jews. They had read about it in the writings of the Jews. They knew the story. They had seen the prophecies that had been fulfilled already, so they trusted that this prophecy too would be fulfilled. They saw the star. They came for miles and miles and miles, months of travel to come and worship at this king of the Jews, to present gifts to him. And then the next step of faith is at some point when they started to leave, God met them in a dream and said, hey, don't go back to Herod. Go home a different way. And by faith, they obeyed. They feared God more than they did Herod. And Herod is a dude that needs to be feared. But yet they feared the Lord more than they did Herod the Great. They left a different way. Continue to read, and the character of Herod is demonstrated. He gets angry. Sends out his cohort to kill every child 2 years and younger. Now, Bethlehem's a small place. Don't think of, okay, he killed thousands of babies. Most demographers that deal with demographics said it was probably around 24 children, probably around that age in that area, because it's a small village, not a big place, not densely populated. So somewhere, give or take, somewhere around 24 babies, but that's 24 babies. That's 24 little boys, 2-year-olds, just so he could try
and kill the King of the Jews.
You know, no matter what people do, no matter how much the world tries to stop what God's doing, God's 10 steps ahead of them. And he had already sent Joseph and Mary to Egypt with what they needed to get there, what they needed to live there until it was time to come back when Herod died. God is amazing. God is at work, even in the little details that we just kind of read through and breeze over. God is faithful. So whatever's going on in your life, whatever you think may be out of control, whatever you think may be against you, just remember God's for you. And he's bigger than even Herod the Great. He's bigger than your problems too. And he'll provide what you need when the time comes. And he'll get you where you need to be. He'll get you back when you need to be back. He will be faithful if we will just be faithful to him. Still amazes me that the two groups of people that God chose to reveal the birth of his son to were shepherds and Gentiles thousands of miles away. Just goes to show his child was sent for everyone. For everyone. Let's stand. Tonight, just as we're going to pray, and man, the biggest thing is, I guess, for me, is as we're singing, as we're praying, this time of commitment, this time of reflection, man, just whatever trouble.